Welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. And now, here's your host, Dave Lewis.
He never got to see the Grand Canyon.
How would you like to handle it?
I can pay you. $20,000. Cash.
I don't mean like that. Why are we here?
I want you to get Nick Jameson. Bring him to me. I know where he is.
That is intense, dude. That is intense. Little snippet of Jimi Kendrick, Willie Rowland, and Carl Schreiber, the actors there. I've got the writer, director, he edits, he does everything. Sean Flanagan from Almaden Films. How's it going, bro?
Hey, how are you, David?
Awesome. That was an ultra-intense movie. I was lucky to be a part of that a couple years ago. Had a great run on Amazon Prime, and now you can just go ahead and check it out on YouTube if you want, but fun to do. Welcome aboard. I wanted to pick your brain about what you're doing with this new project. I know a little bit about, but the audience doesn't. Tell us about the Moretti Brothers.
Wow, where do I start with that one?
The beginning.
Man, so what are we on? 2022, I think. So I met Willie, and we did Jimi Kendrick, and one day he comes in, he says, "Man, you got to just listen to my brother and I talk, because they're really fun together." And I did some audio recordings, and next thing you know, I wrote the script, and it took a few months, and then the script sat for a couple years because one of the brothers had a little health issue, and then he came back and was able to work on the film. But the Moretti Brothers is loosely based on the Rowland Brothers. And so it's really about the people, you know, the characters you want me to keep going?
Oh, yeah, please.
Yeah.
It's about the characters. Oh, thanks for giving me that breakdown. It's about the characters.
Yeah. No, I thought you were going to say, thanks, Sean. Thanks for giving me that break.
Yeah, no. I was going to say, thank you for participating. Have a great night after that.
Yeah.
It's about the characters.
Yeah. The thing is that, you know, this is not a huge budget film. So it's a drama, and it's really about the people and the way they do things. And so what I mean by that is that when you start making a film, sometimes you just go with what you have, and you don't know what you have until sometimes the day of filming. And I know that's kind of a confusing, but and it's kind of a long story. What happens is when you start making your film, it sort of, after you leave the script, it sort of takes on its own, world, and it has a mind of its own, and it sort of turns into something else. And so as a director on a low budget film, even though I wrote the script, when we get ready to film, I have to keep my eye on things. I have to keep my eye on the characters and the locations, and because a lot of things that you plan for, they don't happen and they come undone, and then you have to recreate things on the fly. And when you recreate things on the fly, you don't know what you're going to get. So you have to keep a really close eye on that.
So when you first started, was it tougher to do because you go in with a script, you have an idea, it's going to go like this, this, and this, and then you shoot it the way you think it's going to be, and maybe something sucks, you know, you don't have that adaptability like you have now? Or have you always been able to do it on the fly?
Yeah, I think in low budget film production, there's always things that you're doing on the fly. And I've said this before, I think even on to you before I go, I've never had the luxury of actually creating a storyboard. Like M. Night Shyamalan, he'll storyboard his whole movie. I can't do that. There's no guarantee I'm going to get what's in the cartoon. I wish I could. So you really have to say, okay, you know, here's the scene and here's the people and here's the time and we're going to show up and we're going to go. And we're going to get the best that we can for that day.
Do you have any experiences that stand out for you in terms of, hey, I got the most bang for my buck out of this project. We were able to do this, this, and this with such a low budget and one camera. And man, we made some movie magic.
Yeah, I think that happened. I have so many stories like that are wonderful, but I think that really happened on the friggin' Mafia movie. We did the Friggin' Mafia movie. At the last minute, I get a call from a police officer. I'm at my production office. He goes, "Is Mr. Flanagan there?" He left me a message. He goes, "This is Tim Halpin with San Jose PD." And I call him back and he goes, "Oh, I want to make movies." And so I said, he goes, "I want to be an actor and everything." So I call him back. He goes, "Oh, by the way, I have an airplane." Do you need an airplane? I go, I will. I'll write a scene for your airplane. And so we filmed up on Mount Umanum. You know, Richard Mui was in that scene, but we filmed up on Mount Umanum. And at the time there were two towers up there, one bigger than the other. And Tim flew his airplane through the two towers. Richard Lynch is on the ground trying to, you know, shoot him and everything. So that's one of those things that really, you know, sort of pops in terms of, you know, the lucky production value.
How difficult is it when you work with folks, say Tim wants to be an actor? You know, I maintain that it's not easy to do, right? I mean, you know, a lot of folks have more training than others, but just to say, "Hey, you know what, man? Put me in a movie. I'm one of your homeboys. I'm an actor."
Yeah. Could you repeat the initial first part of your statement, question there?
No, in terms of the difficulty, you know, when you do low budget films, you don't always have folks with a, you know, tremendous amount of background in terms of being actors. And you've had people, I'm sure your friends that you've come across over the years, "Hey man, I'm an actor, but I mean, I'm good. You put me in something," and they're not actors. And you have to work with people who aren't actors and still maneuver and craft and still come up with a product that's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, for the longest time, for many years, I didn't have to do any auditioning or, you know, I didn't have to audition people because I had so many friends that were actors that were ready to go. But every once in a while, I would meet people that were naturally really cool people, really good at what they did. And a really good example of a natural person who's not really a trained actor, but who's an exciting character. Two people. One is John Rowland, Willie's brother. He's not a trained actor, but everything that comes out of his mouth is just unbelievable. It's just, you know, you can't plan for that. And then the other person is a friend of mine who's also a retired cop, San Francisco PD, is DC Murphy, real strong cowboy type. He was opposite you, as a matter of fact, in Jimmy Kendrick. He's not a trained actor, but he's very good at what he does as a bad guy.
Really good. Really good. In the bar with, I don't know if it's leather, but short sleeves with a jean jacket or something like that, but a real badass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can't really fake that.
No. In fact, I didn't even think he was role playing. I thought, this is who this dude is. This is a ruffian that looks like he could really handle a shotgun.
Yeah. Some of my favorite tough guy actors are actually cowboys. Today, there's a lot of low budget cowboy movies being made. And although the movies are so-so, they're cast with people. There's this crew of people who ride horses and who are very good at what they do in these types of movies. One of the guys, his name's Loose Reins. Loose Reins. If you ever look at IMDb, his name's Loose Reins. He's been in so many, you know, cowboy films. But those are my favorite kind of characters. Tough cowboy guys.
I'm going to play a snippet of something that we've talked about it before, is your inspiration for getting into movies in the first place.
"You call yourself a fighter? Prove it now. Give me that same chance. The way he's been ducking is a disgrace. If he ain't no coward, why don't he fight me then?"
"I can't listen anymore to this anytime.
I don't care what your rank. You don't get no shot, and I mean that."
"I'm glad you people are seeing this here.
What are you doing? I want to fight this guy."
"Well, you got him. But you fight him without me.
What are you saying?"
"It's finished. Yes, I'm finished. I don't want no more of this. I don't want no more. You understand?
None of it.
It's over with.
I'm judging by my fighting record." Hey, woman. Listen here. Since your old man ain't got no heart, maybe you'd like to see a real man. I bet you stay up late every night dreaming you had a real man, don't you?"
"You want it? You got it.
Bring your pretty little self over to my apartment tonight. And I'll show you a real man.
You want it? You got it. You got it. You got it. You got it. You got it.
Now, I know a lot of folks were fired up, inspired for a lot. You know, they still play You're Gonna Fly Now, you know, the first Rocky. It's an ultimate inspirational type movie. But you were fired up and got into this business because of Rocky III. Why is that?
Man, let's see. 1976 was when Rocky came out, and I think I was like 13. And I remember my cousin, he had this Rocky poster in his room. You know, we used to go play football on Sundays. We were just kids, you know, little kids. And I'm like, yeah, what's a Rocky poster there? Oh, you know, movie, okay. And that was it. That's the only thing I ever saw that I remember about Rocky. And then one day, you know, I'm 18 years old. My girlfriend and I, we're going to go to the movies. We open up the newspaper. You remember that, David? If you wanted to see
what
movie we're
dating ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you open up the newspaper. We're trying to figure out what movie. She goes, hey, let's see this movie here. It's Rocky III. I go, I don't want to see a boxing movie. And I didn't. I did not want to see a boxing movie. I wanted to see something like, you know, Somewhere in Time or, you know, On Golden Pond or something like that, right? So we ended up going to see Rocky III. And that movie, it changed my life. And there was never a day where I didn't remember that moment in the theater. That, you know, I don't know if you've ever had that feeling. Like, I mean, I had tunnel vision. I was in the theater. I forgot I was even with my girlfriend. I had tunnel vision, and I'm looking at the movie, and I remember the movie opening, and it said starring Sylvester Stallone, and then I remember it said written and directed by Sylvester Stallone. And I go, and this is when I'm doing extra work in movies, and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. Am I going to be a makeup artist? Am I going to be a stuntman? Am I going to be an actor? What am I? I know I want to do something. And I says, oh, I want to do that. And not to mention the shape that he was in. I go, I've never seen any human being like this in my life. So that movie changed my life, and it made me, you know, do the things that I've done in the film world.
So it was the abs that put you over the top.
Actually, it was the jump roping. But he was so, yeah, I'm sorry, Dave. He was so lean. In Rocky 1 and 2, he was a little on the chunky side. And Rocky 3 was the movie where he was first ripped. And I remember he was really, really ripped. And First Blood followed Rocky 3. First Blood was the next movie. And it was, I don't think, it could have been only like a year later. But that's where we really started to see the man that we saw for, you know, 30 years.
I know you said written, directed. Does that give you inspiration? Because like all of us that do film, whether we're writers, directors, actors, you know, we want to get discovered. We want to blow up. We dream of it. But also just taking the initiative and making your own stuff. So, you know, folks that don't know the Hollywood story with Sylvester Stallone, I mean, he was knocking around Hollywood for years and trying to get an agent and, hey, yo, I'm an actor. And his agent said, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be a time of talent. I mean,
dude, get out of here. And then he writes his movie, Rocky, and shops it around. And, you know, some people are interested in it, but they don't want him to be in it. And he's, hey, I'm not
going to see the movie unless I'm an actor in it.
And so finally, he finds somebody that loves the product.
Was that the French Rocky that you just said? That sounds like
I went halfway between Stallone and Pepe Le Pew.
And Jean Reno.
He makes beautiful music to Gazelle. That was not Rocky right there. The first one. Yeah, I thought the first one was pretty good. And then as I went longer into the impression, then I felt some deterioration as I went on with the Stallone. And credit to you, we're friends. You caught me on that. Didn't let me get away with it. Didn't let me go full Stallone. It wasn't any good. As I started to slip, you caught me. And you exposed me. And I give you credit for that.
I'm sorry. How did I expose you?
No. I was saying that my Stallone was pretty good when I first started doing it.
Yeah. There you go.
Then I started to slide. And you got me. But anyway, you know, long story short, and I think we're already beyond that, is that he got someone to believe in him as the actor in the product that he wrote. and that enabled him to take off. You know, so we're trying to, you know, do something with our lives and you want to be discovered. Him, you know, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, nobody wanted those guys either until they wrote their own thing, did Good Will Hunting, right? So I have a great deal of respect for people that are writing, directing, producing, acting in their own stuff. It's a little testament to a love of the craft, not just, I think you mentioned this one time to me, like people after a few years stop doing movies, they stop acting, they stop directing because they're doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, they're not doing it for the love of the craft, they're doing it for the fame, for the money. And if they don't have that, they're out.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, for me, you know, I started out doing a lot of acting a long time ago and I didn't like, arriving on the set. And you're going through this on my film right now with the Moretti Brothers, where you show up and I go, okay, Dave, that was a good day. I'll see you next month.
Yeah, next month. Make sure your hair is the same length and your beard is the same length.
Yeah. I didn't like that. I wanted to participate in the filmmaking. And so I sort of transitioned myself. I started, you know, because I worked on 15 films as an extra. And so, and there was nothing, to me, there was nothing in the world like being on a movie set. I think I told you I was on The Lost Boys and it was in Santa Cruz. And here's Corey Feldman and Corey Haim and Jason Patrick and Diane Wiest. And it's Harvey Bernard, the producer, and Joel Schumacher directing. I go, wow, this is like, you know, that was like my world. But the thing is that I really fell in love with filmmaking. I started writing, I started shooting, you know, movies with my VHS recorder by myself in the backyard. So that's, you do sort of just, you know, you fall in love with the craft, and it's much different than being an actor and falling in love with it, because they really are two different worlds. They're really two different worlds.
Do you think the role that you have now in film has helped you with patience? Because you obviously are having to direct, and I've worked with you firsthand on this, where to get it the way you want it, and maybe it's not the way you want it the first time, and hopefully it is by the 20th time.
No, my son helped me with patience.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You know, like I'm really like, come on, let's go. Let's move now. I just got a lot of energy and I'm a madman like that. But I remember when my son was on a playground, he was like 5 years old and I was sitting on a bench and he was in the playground and I was sitting on the bench and I go, man, I could sit here for like 100 years and just be okay. I've never felt like that. I was so relaxed and so content with just, and you know, and that was with my son, right? But I will tell you out of all of the things that, because I, you know, I write, I manage production, I direct the film, I do all the coordinating, and the best thing that I ever did in terms of patience was learning how to editing. You really have to be patient with editing. You could write fast and that's okay, because you could always, you know, you could come back to it and change it and delete it. But with editing, even though you're sort of importing the footage and you're putting it together and you're going to look at it, you're going to change things, at some point, even after you've already seen it for, you know, so many hours, at some point, you really need to stop and say, Dave says a line, Judy says a line. Dave says a line, Judy says a line. Dave says, and what are we hearing when you're doing this? Are you at the beach? Do we hear seagulls? Do we hear ocean? Is it higher than you? Is it far away? And how often does your dialogue cross over into her face? And how often does her dialogue cross over into your face? And so there's so much to that. And with editing, when I'm actually directing, I'm thinking, okay, I'm thinking like an editor. Because if I'm filming something, I'm thinking to myself, okay, action. Am I seeing, do I need what we're doing right now? Do I need this? And that's very important, because if you don't need it, cut, right?
do you feel like you need to get away from that stuff sometimes? I mean, you shoot all day and you sit and edit it. Like, your brain fries. You know, maybe the stuff will look better or different a few days later. That you maybe something you didn't see the first time that you'll get in a viewing 4, 5, 6 days a week later.
Absolutely. And, you know, back to the patience thing, I edited a scene today. I edited a scene yesterday. I will literally throw together the beginning, middle, end of the scene, and it's pretty much 75% done. And I can continue for 3 or 4 more hours and pretty much bring it to 95% and finish it. But I go, no, I drop it. I leave it at 75%. And then I come back a couple of days later and then I look at it. And I see now that, you know, some of the stuff that I have, you know, it can be, you know, it could be tightened or moved around or deleted and bring in new stuff. So I think that's a very important question, Dave, for anybody, even as a writer. If you write something, just write it and then walk away. And then when you come back the next day, especially writing, man, you change a lot of it with writing. Because, you know, anyway.
I was just thinking when you watch a film multiple times, like maybe, you know, Rocky III for you, like the third or fourth time, there's something that you didn't see the first time.
Right.
For me, Happy Gilmore. Although, well, maybe by the seventh time I had that movie down. But I've seen that 20 times. And, you know, the first few times you pick up something little, oh my gosh, I didn't notice that. And, yeah, maybe makes you appreciate the product in a whole new way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, just, I'm trying to think, you know, how often that's happened to me, but, you do, and even with story, whether it's, you know, cinematography or I love music and sound. And I love the way sound supports what we're seeing. But you're right. You know, you come back and, I think when I first saw Blade Runner, I was fresh off Star Wars. So when I'm going to watch Blade Runner, especially with Harrison Ford, you know, I'm young, just starting out. I go, man, I didn't really care for that. I want to, you know, I was like the, you know, into Star Wars. And then for years, they would bring Blade Runner back into the movie theater. Special, you know, presentation, you know, 10, 15, 20, 20, you know, whatever it is. And every year I would go back, director's cut. I would go back and I would just, I go, wow, I really missed something. You know, same with 2001, A Space Odyssey. I did not get that the first time. And then you get older and you really appreciate, you know, what a work of art they are.
Hey, is there a movie that you've gone back to see now as a fully formed adult that you watched when you were a kid and maybe you liked it more or liked it less or went, God, I really like that movie. I can't believe it. It sucks. I mean, I remember going in high school and they had the midnight movies. So we would see Kentucky Fried Movie. Song Remains the Same. There were like the two big in rotation. And then the other one was Rocky Horror, also in that mix.
Right,
I remember seeing those as a kid. And then now watching Kentucky Fried Movie as an adult, I go, oh my gosh, I was pretty juvenile. I'm not saying it's not funny, but I can't believe I loved it as much as I did when I was 18 years old.
Yeah. No, you're right. I almost watched Kentucky Fried Movie a week ago. It's free on Tubi right now. But you know what's weird is when, you know, I grew up, you know, like you watching Gilligan's Island and Lucy and all of these shows and back then it was just a show. There was never a thought of, you know, a light or a microphone or a camera movement. And now I'll watch Lucy and I go, why did Lucy walk from there? Lucille Ball. It's like, and I go, wow, I'm actually picking apart I Love Lucy. I didn't do that 40 years ago. And so it's really wild to do that.
I have a coach, Matt Berry, and he talks about comedy. And I never thought about this before, like Friends. Like, why are those people funny? You know, why is Seinfeld funny? And there's rules that he has, like rules of three, that you'd say these three things in a row. You know, coffee cup, pen, AirPods, and the way you say those three things in a row and then start to have an inflection, start to go maybe raise your voice higher or whatever it was. And he had these different notebooks. So anyway, I never thought about stuff. I just think it's funny. I don't know why it's funny, but there's actually rules and kind of formats to follow in terms of comedy or anything else, you know, that make everything work.
Right. No, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if Robert De Niro follows the rules of three, but, you know, when you look at him and he says, "You talking to me?" You know, "Are you talking?" You know, there's the first one and then there's the second one. And I don't know, did he say it a third time? I can't remember. Yeah. But, you know, you'll see him doing that in other films. You'll see him, you know, he'll say, sign the paper, sign the paper, sign the paper, do it, go sign the paper.
And you don't know why. I mean, if you looked at the script, he just signed the paper, signed the paper. That's not funny.
Right.
But when you deliver like that, it's magic.
Right. And that's the thing. It's funny that you bring that up, because while we're working on this movie, what I've really been aware of is there's been a lot. On this movie, there's been a lot of writing literally while we're filming. Usually I don't do that because, you know, it was done and we jumped in and had our window of opportunity and we would film. But I've done a lot of rewrites on this film. And what I've noticed is I could write anything, and a good actor or a good communicator can communicate whatever's on that paper and have it work. It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't, you know, it's just communicating. It's amazing.
Do you think, Sean, that being an actor would help you in interpersonal relationships because of the fact of being able to listen? So a good actor doesn't just wait for Sean to say his line. Hurry up and finish your stuff so I can get to mine. I say mine, you say yours. And then there's no real connection there. But if I'm listening to you, then my response is authentic, whatever the words are. It's in a state of paying attention and being attentive to you. So would you think that if someone's a good actor, they would be able to be a good communicator in real life?
I think it just comes down to who it is, you know, because not everybody's the same, right? Some people are just not good listeners at all, and they probably will never be good listeners. And if they do decide to change their ways and really stop and listen and then comment on what they just heard instead of immediately jumping into what they want to say next. But I think it starts off very small. I think that with what you said, that's like the beginning of just being aware of needing to listen, even if it's, you know, for a second or 5 seconds. And so I because that's just the beginning. And then there's the whole real life thing where you really, because some people you just don't want to listen to for very long ever. You know,
not naming names, but yeah, I've got a couple.
No, and then there's other people where I could sit in front of them for 30 minutes and not say anything. And I'm like all ears.
Hey, what about the person, you know, you've had these too, that just like the actor, I'm waiting for you to be done with your line so then I can go and say what I want to say, where I don't even really give a damn what you said, but I'm going to go off on some riff and you're just maybe a foil to that other person that wants to hear himself talk.
Yeah. I think that happens, right? I think that happens because a lot of times actors, I'll give an actor a script. I'll say, "Did you read the script?" They'll go, "I read my lines." Right? "I read my lines." I go, "I think it's really important that you just read the script one time. And that way, you know, the story, and then you could go in and you could you could visit your character." But then I think it's important for actors, just as the filmmaker. A filmmaker is attached to every single last detail in the shot. The coffee cup, the color of the wall, the color of the light, and the list goes on and on and on. And I think that to become a better actor, the more the more you take on like that in terms of detail, the better actor you're going to be. Because I'll tell you, I'm producing the film. I'm directing it. I bought all the props. I made 20 visits to Goodwill so I could find a particular prop. All of those things are paying off. When I'm on the set, there's not one person ever who knows more about the movie than me. And that's just the way it is, right? And I think an actor should. I think an actor, because what, and this is what happens, David, an actor will say, Sean, you know, I think that I might want to walk in from over there, because if I'm looking over there and the sun's here, I'm going to look like this. I go, yeah, you're just thinking about your shot. You're not thinking about the last five scenes, what you did in the first frame, where you're going. And so I think it's important for actors to think way out like that.
You just had me thinking about people being self-absorbed with their own world. And I'm just imagining a Tinder date. And the girl says, hey, you know, I like to hike. I like to hike too. You know what? I went to Half Dome about a week ago. And man, I got like halfway up. I tried a couple months ago, but I wasn't nearly as good a shape as I am now. I went on intermittent fasting and I shed a few pounds. Mostly the cardio, doing fast, I was able to lose some of the weight that way and start to build my legs in the gym. I used to maybe squat, you know, 175, but now I do 225, really going deep. I used to not go to 90 degrees, but now I'm almost touching the toes up there. Oh, anyway, that's my third time going to Half Dome. And the first time I went was, first date, blind date, girl, 20, not really a lot in common, but say, I'll give it a shot. Sex was unbelievable. Oh, my God. Anyway, Sean, that's what I'm talking about right now. Taking someone that's not listening, just waiting for themselves to pop in and go on their own tangent.
Yeah, you know, and that was me as a young person, because I had so much energy. And the thing is, David, I think that people are really, really excited to share. And that's why they do that. But you have to, you know, take it in parts, right? And just calm down a little bit. And then the more you do that, the better you get at it.
I may have to bring you on as a therapist. I think I'm making progress because of you.
I'm a good listener.
Yeah, it shows. It shows. Hey, what is the timetable for this particular project, you know, getting it done? And then what do you dream of in terms of distribution? And what are the challenges to get something distributed?
Well, you know, distribution is another world that's full of challenges and there's no guarantees. You know, when you're making a movie, you have so much control over everything. And once you get, you know, put it out for distribution, you sort of lose your control. You don't know what's going to happen. And there's a lot of sharks out there, honestly. And, you know, at that point, I need an attorney in order to have my control. And so, you know, things are changing now with Amazon Prime and Netflix and stuff like that. But, you know, we're making a feature film, full-length movie. So that's a good step for, you know, interest in the film. And, you know, we'll probably go, you know, I think that with Jimi Kendrick, we submitted to six festivals all around the country. We got accepted to a couple. I think we went to one in a theater that projected really nicely. But now we have a feature and we plan on, you know, submitting to more festivals, getting as much exposure as we can. And then, you know, hopefully we get, there's different levels of distribution. The last movie we had, Jimi Kendrick, I found a distributor who was just starting out. And so he really didn't have much experience, but he knew how to get content on Amazon Prime. I mean, I don't know how to do that. I'm doing everything else on the film. So, you know, we went that route. But then there's the next level of distributors, and these are the distributors. There's a lot of big distributors that go to the American film market. And the American film market is once a year in Santa Monica, and buyers from all around the world, different markets, Germany, Japan, you know, those are big markets. Those people come and hopefully buy your film. So the goal is to get a distributor who's, I'll give you an example. I used to work with Sean and Patrick Donahue, and they had a distributor in the 90s, Artist View Entertainment. And they used to deal in a lot of low budget martial arts action type films, and they've actually grown and they're distributing some pretty good films, and they're still around. So I hope to get somebody like that who's not going to, you know, I'm not going to disappear and change your address the next day and move.
Hey man, I'm honored to be along for the ride, and I've got great feelings about the Moretti brothers. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about it, and I'm glad that you're a part of it. I know that you and I tried to work together for a lot of years with our mutual friend Richard Mui. He's like, you should call David Lewis. Call Dave.
With a voice just like that. You were making fun of my Stallone. Now you commit me with that voice like that. You need to call David Lewis.
Well, you got to remember, I had like four or five films with Richard Mui as a dingbat. So he played this guy. His name was Chicago, and he had these glasses, and he was really good at what he did. And I thought, wow, that's, you know, I found myself, you know, I'm writing for Rich's character. So when I'm writing, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I told you, don't go there.
you kept in touch with that guy. He's become big time book author, living down in San Diego now.
Yeah, we haven't talked in a while. You know, he's a writer, and I'm a filmmaker, and there's two different worlds. And I'm a terrible long distance friend. I'm not very good at long distance relationships.
None of us are, but now with the technology, you can do the WhatsApp, you can FaceTime, or at the very minimum, a quick text. So I think it's easier now long distance than it ever has been.
It's never easy,
but you can with a little effort.
Right. I think it's just a matter of finding the time, you know. It's just really, I have people in my neighborhood that say, Sean, let's go to lunch. I go, no. I go to the taco place, I eat my two tacos, and I go back to work.
You
if I go to somebody
no.
with, huh?
Someone says, let's go, you say no. You actually say,
oh, I can. And they go, let's go to lunch next week. I go, not going to happen. It's just not going to happen.
Most of us kind of bullshit our way out of that. Yeah, we'll see. Let me check my schedule. We'll see.
Because if I do that, I'm going to get the question again. And I don't want that question again. I want to stop it right now. I can't do that. Because the thing is that I'm in and out of lunch 30 minutes by myself. If I go with somebody, that's 2 hours out of my day. I'd rather work all day and then go to dinner. I could do 2 hours at night, but not in the middle of the day.
Okay. Now, had you ever been at a point in your life where you got sucked into some of those lunches, or you hemmed and hawed about it? Have you always been it's not going to happen?
No, I've gone to some of those lunches, and some of them have been nice, and then some of them have been a complete waste of time. I'm serious.
No, I don't doubt it, because I've had lunches that suck too. I'm just saying that it's not as easy for me if someone says, let's get together. And a lot of us do this. Yeah, well, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. You know, check out the schedule, and yeah, hey, maybe we'll make it happen.
No, you know, it's funny is that's like a Jerry Seinfeld saying, hey, let's go to lunch, Jerry. No, we just like next Thursday. No, it's just not going to happen. How about the next Thursday? Probably not. Or actually, that's Larry David. You know, he'll say no five times. How about like next year? It's just not going to happen. You want to come to my birthday? No.
No, I mean, I appreciate that honesty and going no filter like that, because, I mean, I don't think I can hurt people's feelings that easily. Like you do.
When you say no, is it really hurting feelings? I mean, don't people
Well, you said, oh, it's not going to happen. Hey, let's get together for lunch Friday. No way, man. No way. Following? Never. Well, it's not going to happen.
So I guess the not going to happen part. So if somebody called me on Monday and brought up the lunch thing, I says, no, you know, I'm really busy. I don't have time. You know, I'm nice. And then 3 days later, there's the question again. And then, you know, maybe. So it's like maybe by Friday I'm asked again, and then the it's not going to happen thing finally comes out. And the reason why I say it's not going to happen is because I've said no nice twice.
Well, you said no with the expectation of, hey, I'm busy right now, I'm busy later in the week, then it's not going to happen as never. I'm not interested in spending 90 minutes with you under any circumstances. I don't care how busy I am. I have all these movies done. I've got my six-pack abs, got all the money I want. I couldn't think of any scenario where I'd want to spend 90 minutes with your ass.
You know, sometimes that happens, but you know, I try to be nice.
I've never done that.
No, you haven't, right?
No, I mean, now I've got it in my arsenal, but I just don't see myself going there. Credit to you for the honesty and the no filter. The Moretti Brothers, coming soon. Look for it. I'm honored to be a part of it. Sean Flanagan from Albany Films. Hey, let's get together for lunch tomorrow. What do you think?
Not this week.
Okay, well, what about, you know, end of next week?
See, do you see, like, I start sweating with that question. I'm like sweating, thinking,
no,
man.
I just let me down easy. Dude, it's not going to happen.
So I was filming with you. We were filming in San Juan Bautista. We did some takes and we pulled out Togo sandwiches and had a nice little picnic. That's convenient, right?
It is convenient.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that should be enough.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
Letting me down easy. That's movie maker Sean Flanagan. And you can follow him at Almaden Films. Be on the lookout for the Moretti Brothers. Our executive producer is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. Your positive comments, the five-star reviews are huge. They mean everything. And we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you next time.